Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity. Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you in on a Wednesday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Busy one. A lot of baseball to get into. The Fighting Mike Schaefer's up 3-0. Husker practice. David Neville got the workout in yesterday, so that's good news. A lot to discover as the week continues with Nebraska, their health, heading into Purdue, and we'll try and take care of you. Midweek edition of Hail Varsity Radio. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, numbers to get in, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865 on Twitter at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, at TJ underscore Henning. Can also say what's up to us on HailVarsity.com. Website's gorgeous. Jump on to the message boards and premium sites. And here's what I'm picturing right now. Okay, it's 3-0, and you know, fans of different teams, be it football, baseball, basketball, whatever. You know, fans, guys that have been just straight up diehard fans of a club forever, and you know, a lot of Cub fans right now are sweating. We'll get into that. You know, a lot of Cleveland fans. And I think there's more Cleveland fans that I know that aren't bandwagon Cleveland fans. There's people I know, like Mike Schaefer and Nick Handley, that have loved Cleveland forever because of that those mid to late 90s teams. And I get that. Dear family friend who's passed on, biggest Cleveland guy I knew. Loved him some Cleveland Indians. Had the bumper sticker on his minivan, like the old school late 80s throwback. And he loved them. He grew up with them. All the kids who grew up in the 50s loved Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris, Whitey Ford, obviously. But there was one Cleveland fan that my family got to know. And so I have a soft spot in my heart for Tribe fans. And what a matchup it could be with Cleveland-Chicago. Now, Chicago's got to fulfill their end of the bargain on that, but it's kind of nice to see. Usually, sports are so cutthroat and angry, which is fine. It's all good. It's all good to be rough and tumble, but Cleveland's a great story, and I know they just won it in basketball, but from a baseball perspective, they're probably right behind suffering, right behind the Cubs. Yeah. They got to be.
Well, I think it'd be cool because I think the first night of the World Series would also be the first night LeBron James
and the guys get the rings.
Block over. Cleveland would be on fire that night.
Well, and if someone puts a cigarette out in the lake, okay. So, okay, that's too easy. Yeah. I'm sorry. Coming up on the show, Jerry DiNardo, the coach, Uncle Jerry with us in 15 minutes. He was on site yet again to see Nebraska. His thoughts on the Big Reds' win over Indiana as Nebraska moves forward. A Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart will be with his Shoey in studio. And then Brad Edwards, ESPN college football analyst and insider. He has done some analytic work with Nebraska and not just a finger point at Nebraska, but also Baylor when it comes to rankings versus what actual data trends and statistics say about Nebraska. He ain't hating. He just did the mother of all story problem equations and came up with some data on Nebraska. So Brad Edwards with us. And then Mike Babcock, historian, author, Hall of Famer, and we love him with Hail Varsity. Mike Babcock, in the 5 o'clock hour, we have the numbers to get in. Couple of thoughts here. Let's talk letdown for a minute. Is that on your radar for Nebraska Saturday? Is it on your radar? Are you worried about a letdown? And you're like, Schmidt, how? You lost to him last year. I understand that. I think it's in the back of the players' minds. They've also been deprogrammed a bit with the whole revenge angle, because you play with passion, you play with emotion. Well, you play with emotion, it can get zapped. Be it momentum, or you just run out. You get too hyped. You get too jacked. And are you geeked up for Purdue? No. You're looking towards that. The season broke down into three parts. First exam, midterm, final, right? And your first exam was Oregon. Well, it's just kind of couple them. First exam, we'll say Oregon, Northwestern. Just kind of throw them together, right? Midterms, obviously, Ohio State, Wisconsin. And then your final is Iowa. And if you get to the Big Ten title game. I know I've just spit out six games there. But that's kind of what you're up for. As a Nebraska fan, you kind of got into it and nervous about Indiana. Rightfully so. They were playing good ball. And I'm guilty of this just because you have yet to see it carry through a whole season of wins for this team in Nebraska, the games you're supposed to win. Okay? You just haven't seen it yet. Not that it can't happen or won't happen, but you haven't seen it in year two because there's only last year to go off on. And I look at Nebraska right now and Purdue, they're 3-3. They seem a little bit better than last year when it comes to throwing the ball around to Yancey and Blouse, a little bit squirrely with getting out of trouble. But overall, they're just bad defensively. And from a letdown standpoint, I don't think that'll be the issue. I don't think Nebraska will be looking ahead too much to Wisconsin. Why? Because of what you have on that offensive line. I know we've hammered it the last couple of days. You have guys that are going to be playing out of position, guys that are going to be playing on the offensive line that haven't played together. So you got the cohesion question. I think they'll be ultra focused versus being, let's get Wisconsin here. I think there's a part of them that want Wisconsin, but I think the reality is, as boring as one game one game at a time is, that's truly what they're in this moment. And that's been preached by Riley and everybody because A, you can look back to last year, never forget. And B, you have guys that are going to be starting again, but in different spots. I think the defense will be ready. I think a quarterback needs to stay healthy. And I think what you want to do is make this game about 2 hours and 5 minutes and then head to the bars or the rail yard. Not really. But that's what you want. In and out. See ya. Make it short. Run the football. Send Purdue home. Don't let them hang around or give them hope. And by the way, if you get off to a good start, say you get off to an Indiana-esque start where you're up 17 rip, but instead of letting them kind of hang around, put these guys down. And from a talent disparity, you should be able to, TJ, and then get some of the backups in.
Yep.
We're asking, where's Christian Gaylord? Where's Decker at? Right? We're asking where some of these guys are at. We're asking where some of the other talented players are at. Gaylord, Farmer's obviously been playing, but you're wondering where some of these offensive line guys are at. These Jalen Barnett specifically, top 100 guy. Yeah. Well, get them in with a safe lead so they can get game experience, get the feel. And then maybe as you move forward, God forbid the injury situation continues to creep up, you're a little better prepared. We'll talk in a week about how injured Nebraska is going into Wisconsin and Ohio State. It obviously limits severely what you want to do offensively with your run game first and then setting the play action up and being able to be effective, have your best talent available and ready to go against Wisconsin's best talent. Get some backups and get some guys that are familiar and confident against Purdue. Speaking of letdowns, Cubs tonight, 2-1 deficit. I was watching the game last night. Yasmani just destroyed that pitch. Mm-hmm. It was 3-0. Said, I'm going to flip it over to Vi Slamajama. And I flipped it back and it was 6-0, and I'm like, I'm out. I get it. Wow. If you're going to be a great team, you always got to answer this question. And we're pretty good at labeling things. Showdown Saturday or Judgment Day or, well, the Cubs. Their moment of truth is tonight. Easy to label. Madden's like, no, we're all good. We're just going to treat it like any other. Right. No,
I mean, he's really laid back like that.
No, he's so chill. Mm-hmm. He is, and I believe he'll try and do that. But in all honesty, the Cubs were so good. They've never had to deal with this year. You got to pass the test if you're going to be a championship club in whatever sport. And in baseball, the Cubs have had minimal adversity this year.
Oh, yeah.
And they're dealing with the dear God triple threat here. One, pressure. History. 108. Two, Kershaw. If you don't win tonight, LA is going to throw him tomorrow night.
Which you could,
but listen, they may.
They okay? may. Yeah, they may. Okay? I would
so
personally save him for game six.
That's looming there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're just pressing. Your offense has gone MIA. And then you're going into tonight with I can't lose. You have the pressure of 108 and counting. And three, there's Kershaw, trick or treat.
Well, it's one thing for your offense to sputter against Kershaw and Jansen. It's another thing when it's Rich Hill. Like, Rich Hill shouldn't be doing that last
night.
But
Rich Hill's
Cubs.
A filthy, dirty, left-handed. They're just...
I get it, but, I mean, that offense, that shouldn't be going scoreless against Rich Hill. I get it against Kershaw. I get it against Jansen again last night, but, man.
Gets back to the pressure.
Yeah.
It gets back to adversity. It gets back to being unfamiliar.
The Cubs are very talented, and a lot of these guys have never been there. They've got a little bit of experience sprinkled in with Ross and some other guys, but it's mostly as a young team, and maybe they are feeling the pressure a bit.
Well, they're feeling it, and baseball, man, is such a mental game where it's just on you.
If you fail 70% of the time, you're an awesome hitter.
You're awesome, right. You're still trying to shake it. The good news here is this. You got Lackey tonight. I know Lackey's last outing, he only went four innings, but Lackey has done... Incredible is an overuse. Has done good work in the postseason. He's 8-5. Most active career postseason starts. And he'll go at it. Here's the other thing. Arrieta, and I love him. So much fun to watch. But his margin for error is like, well, hell, I got to throw a shutout. I mean, the way things have been going for them. Mm-hmm. So there's so much going on between the ears with Chicago that, again, let down Saturday for Nebraska. I think they'll be fine. Let down Wednesday for Wrigleyville and Murphy's and every Cub fan you know with Kershaw probably waiting to put you down.
It's a scary thought.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it tonight.
Yeah.
How do they react? I think Lackey's, you know, he'll be a spry 38-year-old here in a couple of days. I think he'll be fine. Here's the thing with the Cubs. Batting average, 155 NLCS. I mean, that's Schmidt-esque. Dodgers, their starters, limiting the Cubs to a 136 average, 152 against lefties. And what I was able to kind of gather from some of the Baseball Tonight analysts here is the off-speed pitch. And the Cubs have seen the curveball a lot, but they have seen it twice as much during fastball count pitches by the Dodgers because the Dodgers are so confident in what they do, throwing that hook. And then that's the other thing. Curveball I know like, straight ball hit very well. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what's going on a little bit. Somebody get the Cubs a live chicken tonight. Hey, Willie Mays Hayes, because Cleveland's probably going to win this thing. Tonight, a Willie Mays Hayes leather glove and a picture and portrait of Lou Brown. Cleveland can get there. Chicago, you got to join them. So we'll see how things shake out. But I dust off my baseball excitement about twice a year. One or two games in the World Series and then tonight because it's that big for Chicago.
Maybe the Dodgers are trying to do it for Scully.
Yeah.
Bring him back. World Series.
That would be pretty cool, that would actually. Be awesome. But now that mental part of baseball, they've done everything. They've practiced. They've taken infield. They've been on the road. I mean, they know this, but it's different. It's bigger. It's pressure. And it's just the fact that you can't lose tonight. You got history all over you. And then you get Kershaw waiting. Have fun. I mean, have you bumped into any Cub fans today?
Oh, I live with one. Oh, he's diehard.
Hitting all the sharp objects.
I should, honestly.
Can't you? Can't you just rattle off like 15 people you know that are Cub fans?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I got Riley the mullet that lives there. I mean, out of support, if I still had it, I'd break out my 1993 Cubs batting practice jersey that has the old Rhino number on the back. I took a lot of lawns to mow to buy that thing. I mean, Suits is a Cubs fan.
Mm-hmm.
Who else?
Kevin Kugler.
Kugler's a giant Cubs fan. And I mean, I liked Chicago growing up too, but I just divorced myself honeymoon circa 2003 when it was game six, the Bartman game. That's when I just said I can't do it anymore. All right, well, I get caught up with Jerry DiNardo. College football next. BTN, Hail Varsity continues.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
I love Jerry DiNardo. I almost went to work for him one time. We had a nice Italian dinner at a nice Italian restaurant in Bloomington.
Thank you, Coach Banker. A nice Italian dinner at a nice Italian restaurant. I hope you enjoyed it, Nebraska fans. Pre-nail-biter against the Hoosiers, we welcome in Coach DiNardo. Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, how we doing?
Doing great, Chris. Thanks.
Appreciate the time. Let's get into last Saturday as Nebraska escaped with a win. Defense played well. Offense did just enough. And as you make your way through the season, kind of midway point for Nebraska, what are your what's your reaction to what you saw Saturday? I know you were on the sidelines against Illinois. You saw Nebraska a couple of weeks later at Indiana. And how much has the team gotten better, in your opinion?
You know, I think they've made steady improvement. You know, the thing that jumped out at me, I guess, at Indiana more than Illinois, you know, the Illinois game, even though they were losing at halftime, you always felt like they were in control, Nebraska. You know, you always felt like Nebraska was going to win the game. Indiana was a little different feel, and I always go to the home team for the first half. So for Nebraska, I was on Nebraska's sideline for the first half of the game, and then I was on the Illinois' Indiana home team. I'm on their side. So I was on Nebraska's sideline during the most tense moments of the game. And the reason I say that is really impressed by their body language. At that one point when they were trying to figure out if it was going to be Indiana's ball on the fourth down or Nebraska's ball, you know, the offensive guys were saying, you know, to the defensive guys, you know, if you guys got to go out there, we need you here. You know, it was going to be their last drive. You know, they wind up killing the clock. But just the competitive spirit, I got a better feel for Tommy as a leader and as a competitor against Indiana than Illinois. I don't know. You know, it could have been me. It may not have been anything about the team. I just came away with a really good feeling that this team has a great spirit about them and they have great team morale.
Jerry DiNardo with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, let's go a little further and follow up with your feel for Tommy's leadership. What did you see? What's your takeaway from what you saw?
Well, obviously he's a little banged up, and they obviously didn't want to run him. Just that the team responds to him. I mean, you can tell he's in charge. I think people feed off his competitiveness. You know, he makes bad decisions at times. We all do. Every player does. The right guard makes bad decisions, but you know, 8 million people don't see it because he's playing right guard. But he overcomes those things. He's very, very competitive. Very much into the game. Things go bad, he never hangs his head. You know, just the whole team feeling, Chris, was impressive. Did they play their best game? No. Did they look like the 10th best team in the country? I don't know. I haven't seen all the teams in the country. It's hard for me to say. They probably don't think they played their best game. But Indiana's a good team. Indiana's probably the best team they've played. You know, we all thought it was going to be Oregon. I'm not sure Indiana isn't the best team they played.
So, Coach, the Nebraska offensive line is pretty banged up right now, and there's been talks of perhaps maybe even pulling some red shirts halfway through the season here. I'm just curious if you've ever had to do that, and what is the thought process for that like when you're talking with that player? And is it the player's decision or the coach's final decision on that?
Well, everybody's different now. The way I recruited is, you know, I would tell the player that they would always be involved in their freshman year red shirt decision. If they wanted to tell me during the recruitment period, you know, you might have an engineering student that wanted 5 years to get a Vanderbilt degree, and he told me during recruiting he wanted 5 years, and I wanted to redshirt as a freshman. Other guys said I wanted to play you right away. Those are easy decisions. These are the toughest decisions. So what I laid out during recruiting is if you were ever in a position where it looked like you were going to be redshirted and then mid-season we may need you, you were going to be part of that decision. My first year at LSU, our center, Carmouche, got hurt in midseason. Todd McClure, who played like 15 years with the Falcons, was the backup, but we were going to redshirt him. So every time we had a lead, if we substitute, we played the third center. So Hal Hunter, the offensive line coach, came up to me and says, what do you want to do with Carmouche out? I said, ask Todd if he wants to play. If he wants to play, put him in there. If not, we'll go to the next guy. Todd said yes. He started from halfway through his freshman year the rest of the time at LSU, and he was, like I say, he was a pro center for the Falcons for, I think, 15 years. So I always consulted the player. I'm not sure how Mike does it.
There's a question with the offensive line. You have some redshirt freshmen, Coach, that were highly touted and on paper some top performers and even got pretty good looks in the spring game that haven't gotten in. It's been walk-on guys for Nebraska that have stepped in on the injury front. As a guy who was an All-American on the offensive line, I know it's different for each guy, like you kind of touched on, but and you coached O-line for a number of years. What are some reasons a guy is not on the field? He might have all the talent in the world. He might be a strong dude. He might have amazing feet. But what keeps a redshirt freshman or sophomore, if he's more talented or physically gifted, off the field over guys that are perceived to have some less talent and strength on the line?
Well, I mean, there's only a couple of reasons a freshman wouldn't play if he's got enough talent. So, you know, you described a pretty talented guy, Chris. So, you know, if he's not strong enough, it sounds like you guys are strong enough, or if he can't pick up the offense because perhaps his high school offense was a pretty simple offense and he wasn't used to the fast-moving game of college football and the assignments and the stemming defense and all those things. You know, I have to tell you, I'm on the Joe Moore committee for the best offensive line in the country, and I've got, you know, I represent the Big Ten. I have nominated Nebraska along with some other Big Ten teams on that mid-year honorable mention, and they're listed right now if you go to the website. So I think their offensive line is playing rather well, and I think they've made a lot of improvement. I think if a freshman's ready, I'm going to tell you, if I'm a freshman nowadays, you know, when I was a freshman, we were ineligible, so we didn't have a decision to make. But I've coached a lot of guys. But I'm going to tell you, I'm 6-0, and I get a chance to play as a true freshman on a 6-0 team that could win the Western Division, that could win the Big Ten Championship. We don't know what the next 6 weeks are going to bring us. I'm most likely going to say yes, and I think that's what most of the freshmen at Nebraska probably would say.
Coach, some big weekends ahead, but a couple of games this weekend, Wisconsin at Iowa, Ohio State at Penn State. Do you have a feel for what's in store for Ohio State? They're going to another hostile night game just after leaving Camp Randall. In Wisconsin, rivalry game against Iowa, they try and bounce back.
You know, Ohio State, again, they're facing a team. Penn State's had a week off. We saw how much the week off helped Wisconsin. They changed up some of the formations. I think the one thing that helps a little bit with Ohio State is they're going against the spread, whereas they were going against a pro formation team against Wisconsin, and Wisconsin changed up some of the formations, so they had some halftime adjustments to make. You know, I think Ohio State's used to this. You know, it'll be a really tough game. You know, this has become life in both the East and the West in the Big Ten as the league has gotten more competitive. To go to Wisconsin at Iowa, we're going to be at that game for tailgate. And again, I saw a bunch of Nebraska fans this weekend in Bloomington that were at tailgate, and I saw some on the sidelines. But I got to tell you, Chris, I watched the Wisconsin-Ohio State game. This Wisconsin team is really good. They are really good. They're very good on defense. They're very complicated on defense. And, Mike Riley and I have talked about this. I think Paul Chris is one of the best play callers in America. And, Joe Rudolph's the offensive coordinator. I don't know how they do it, so it might be Joe and Paul, but I thought they called a great game against Ohio State. So this should be a great game. I do think Wisconsin's playing better right now than Iowa. You look at Iowa against Purdue, they look pretty good, but we know Purdue's got some deficiencies.
I asked your partner this last week, and I want to get your thoughts because they've now made it 4 in a row. What's gone wrong with the Spartans so far this season?
I watched them today against Northwestern. They're struggling in the offensive line. I would say Northwestern controlled the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. They're very poor tacklers in the secondary, and that's resulted in some big plays. They can't get a pass rush with four, so they wind up bringing extra people. They busted some coverage. What's the young guy's name? Lewerke. I think he is the future. I'm surprised they took him out, except that they were behind by multiple scores, and I thought they had to throw the ball every down, which is basically what they did. So they put O'Connor back in, who did a pretty good job. They're not a very good team right now. They're not playing with a high level of intensity or enthusiasm, and they just don't look like a typical Mark D'Antonio Michigan State team, and he still has some work to do to fix it.
Jerry DiNardo with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Big Ten Network, at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. You catch up with him as the tailgate this week for the Big Ten Network is at Iowa, Wisconsin, Iowa. Coach, about 2 minutes, a little less than that left. How tough a job, how tough a sell is Purdue as they look for their next coach?
Well, it's certainly a tough job, has been. We know what Joe Tilla's did when he was there. The university needs to make a commitment. They have terrible facilities, but they do have shovels in the ground, and the basketball program has just had a facility built, so there's no competition for the dollar. So I think the facility's going to get better. Chris, they just have to decide what they want. They want an established head coach, so they want a young spread guy. They just have to figure it out. I do think this. I think if they get someone in there that's a really good recruiter, they can be competitive in the Western Division with personnel, and I think it can happen fairly soon. They have a permanent crossover in Indiana, so that helps them. We see Wisconsin crossovers this year, Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, so they never run the risk of having three really difficult crossovers. So there's some good things about it. There's always the right guy for the job, picking the right guys. The issue, Darryl Hazel's a heck of a human being, and I felt bad, and I wish he had more time, but I understand it. Do they go the Les Miles route? Do they go a young offensive coordinator route?
Bo Pelini's name's come up.
Bo, I could see that. They just have to decide. These are huge, huge decisions. What's made picking a coach better is there is more money when you're on a campus that perhaps basketball is more important than football culturally, because now you don't have to make a decision where to spend your money. So that should give Purdue a better chance to finance a football program at a very high level, because everybody now has enough money.
Jerry DiNardo with us, the coach, Big Ten Network. Coach, we'll catch up again. Thanks for a few minutes. Great to chat.
Okay, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Jerry DiNardo with us, Hail Varsity Radio. And yeah, you got to get a recruiter there. That was one of the first things he named. Bo's established, but we've gone over that. Tough, 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 tough gig. And do you want him? Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Brad Edwards at ESPN. Mike Babcock, A Loaded Wednesday continues on Hail Varsity.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
I tell you what, it's Mike Shuhart time, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, Hail Varsity Radio. And he's glued to Toronto, Cleveland. Everybody knows a Cleveland fan, don't they?
Yeah, pretty much so.
You're a Cub guy?
I'm a baseball. I like sports in general, period.
Thank you. You're where I'm at.
Yeah.
I am a lapsed Cubs fan. I'm going to go there. Go here, Wilderness Ridge, Fall Golf, 70s or little upper 60s-ish today in eastern Nebraska in Lincoln. It is phenomenal. The trees are beautiful. And find your way out to Wilderness Ridge. Membership benefits, membership pricing. And that, you know, when I talk about membership benefits, that's no initiation fee. That's advanced tee times. That's not only payment options, but how about members happy hour?
Oh, man.
Right?
That's right. Happy hour.
You go see your friends, director of golf, Chris Thompson, and, of course, our old buddy, Mike Shuhart, director of instruction, wildernessridgegolf.com, 402-434-5106. I know it's a 2:30 kick. Get a morning tee time.
Yes.
Get the old three-quarter or full zip up on.
You won't even hardly need that.
You know, well, no, it's going to be nice. It's going to be beautiful on Saturday.
Beautiful this week.
How have you been, Shuey?
I've been great.
Okay.
Always.
Yeah,
you're still golfing, so that's a good thing.
Now, what are you going to do, heaven forbid, if Nebraska turns into Nebraska in November? You can count on a couple of hands. You'll get a 70 or 75-degree day in February where you'll dust them off. You might, a few Decembers here and there, you get some 50s.
Yeah.
In October, it's high five time because it's good golf weather. And then November just kind of, you know, punches you in the face and makes you sad. But until then, get out and golf. And when it gets to be cruddy outside, you can do what at Wilderness Ridge and go see you and do what with some practice to get spring off to a good start.
Yeah, I mean, we're fortunate to have a kind of an indoor facility. We have some heated bays out there that guys actually utilize all year. You know, the golf teams, that's where they practice, you know, during the winter. So it keeps the club in your hand, keeps you still being able to do something. You know, but this time of the year, it's like, first of all, you take advantage of as many of the nice days as you can for as long as you can. That just makes winter that much shorter when it's coming, because it is coming, unfortunately, you know. But once it finally comes, you know, like November, December, it's a great time for players to step back from their season and use it as an evaluation time for them. They need to look back at their season and go, and it doesn't matter what caliber of player you are, whether you're a tour player or whether you're just a recreational golfer. It's like, look back at their season and make some goals on what it is they want to try to improve on. You know, because obviously everybody wants to improve everything, but you can't improve everything at once.
Yeah, be selective and get to, and now the approach is, do you start with the white whale, or do you start with the little thing, and then how far down the list you want to get by fall when it comes to that list of improvements and self-reflection?
You look at it, and you just kind of put it into basically number them from one to hopefully not too many. But what's something that's a priority that you'd like to improve on, you know, whether it be putting, whether it be chipping, whether it be your full swing? You're going to work on all those things, but let's focus on one thing at a time and get a better handle on what that is. And with technology out there today, I mean, it's a great time to go look at, all right, I want to improve my putting. You know, with the internet out there, and there's so many things out there that are available, from ideas, from teaching techniques, from drill techniques that you can use. And you'll find a couple of them that actually work for you, that help massively improve what it is that you want to do, you know. And then you feel better about that. Then you move on to the next. Then you move on to the next. So instead of trying to make everything really good at one time, let's focus on one aspect, move on to another aspect, move on to another aspect.
Well, you can find your way to Wilderness Ridge, those heated bays, during the inclement weather. And focus on that list and get to work. Mike Shuhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment here, Hail Varsity Radio. Now, Shuey, as a pro, who did you kind of lean on for critique when it came time for you to attack some of those areas you needed to fine tune? When you, during the tour, during the off season, how did you go about it? Where did you turn to?
A guy named Mike Cornell, who's the director of instruction at Champions Run up in Omaha.
Okay.
So he was in our section. I knew of Mike for a long time when I was growing up and playing. And I just basically contacted him, and we've been working still to this day. We do a lot of stuff together, you know, so it's been not only beneficial to me as far as a player, but a great friendship, you know, and a relationship that I've built with him. So, you know, it goes way beyond golf, you know.
That's
great. We're super friends, you know, and it, which is one of the special parts about it.
Now, let's talk about your ladies. How's the squad doing?
Pretty good. I mean, we played Colorado about 10 days ago, and we had our best tournament of the year. So we leave Friday for our last tournament of the fall. UNLV's tournament out in Vegas. Bummer.
Yeah. Now, just so I can relay this over the radio, there was a smile ear to ear from Shuey. But yeah, man, I'm heading to Vegas.
Yeah.
Heading to Vegas.
Somebody's
final tournament
it, right?
of the year. And how are the courses out in Vegas? Pretty awesome.
Yeah, they're
some
pretty
of us
good.
In the room
pretty
haven't
good.
Been to Vegas.
They're desert. They're like desert course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you played in Arizona,
played
Vegas,
there.
They're kind of like desert. Not like around here.
Right.
You know, they're more deserty golf courses. So, and a lot is dependent on.
Is there an adjustment you got to make?
A lot depends on the wind because the wind plays a huge factor. I mean, the course that we play last year when we played there, we actually set our school record there.
Awesome.
For scoring. But it was very benign conditions. I mean, it was beautiful. It was 80 degrees out, sunny, no wind. But we played that golf course when the wind can get blowing about 40 miles an hour, and it's a whole different animal. So, I mean, you have to be versed in your ability to play when it's really nice. And then when conditions change a little bit, you know, how do I handle those conditions, not only physically but mentally. So,
quick baseball update. Tito is walking to the mound. Cleveland up 3-0. We asked the question, you know, you got to know a Cleveland fan. Well, the world in Lincoln and, you know, central Nebraska and western Nebraska, I mean, there are Cub fans everywhere. My old partner, Gus, the biggest Cubs fan I know. And after last night, he's like, it's been nice knowing you. I got to ask you, man, do you feel for the Cub fans? Because we were talking to start the show, you know, is there going to be a letdown for Nebraska football Saturday? And, you know. No, I think they'll be okay because guys will be on edge, trying to get better, get cohesive, finish this thing out. Well, Cubs have been a mess mentally here against the Dodgers, and if they go down 3-1 with Kershaw on deck, I know it's not been named yet, but it could have fun.
Yeah, I mean they're going to be in a little bit of panic mode. I mean it's sports is like golf. I mean it's so momentum driven at times. You know, and the Dodgers are on a pretty good roll right
now.
And
it's hard to get momentum in baseball.
And expectations. I mean, the Cubs went in with a lot of expectation. Man, they're the best team in baseball. So it's like finally they got their better last year.
Don't ask the Dodgers that.
Yeah. So it's like now the Dodgers got a little bit of momentum going and they feel pretty good about themselves. The Cubbies are feeling a little pressure and it's like, you know, they're a young team, too, so it's like they haven't been there much before. So,
Mike Shuhart with us, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Winding down Hour 1, Hail Varsity Radio continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Jaybird back in tomorrow and Friday, and we want to see you Friday in the rail yard. The Hale Varsity tailgate, 4 to 6:30. Plenty of prizes, plenty of goodies, plenty of craft beer, plenty of opportunities to get that His and Her Oris watch from Sauter Heyman. The grand prize giveaway, Nebraska-Purdue tickets, Nebraska gear. Shuey'd be there if he wasn't going to Vegas. So we want to see you 4 to 6:30, the Hale Varsity tailgate in the rail yard. Thanks to our great folks in the rail yard, ESPN 1480, Brian Health, Emeritus, Renz Display, your friends at Kidwell, and Triple B Screen Printing. Get that Jano shirt, and I'm sure there'll be some other Husker goodies from the Triple B guys. And the craft beer tasting bar from Longwells and K&Z Distributing. Jay Moore will be there Friday, and we want to see you, your chance to qualify for some awesome stuff at the rail yard. The Hale Varsity tailgate. Now, Brad Edwards, Shuey, you'll listen to him on the way home because Brad's with us in 10 minutes. Put together some data. Brad's a stat guy. Brad's also a math wizard guy. So we'll talk some college football midway point with him, his thoughts on Nebraska. Well, he'll give you thoughts on Nebraska and another team that's kind of been lumped in with Nebraska, Baylor. Here's Brad Edwards, some research he did over the weekend.
Almost every poll you'll see this week starts with the same seven teams in some order. The real challenge for most voters begins at number 8, and that's the spot where Nebraska sits in the AP poll. Next up is Baylor at 9th. But are they truly top 10 teams? According to ESPN's schedule strength calculation, Nebraska's opposition to this point ranks 75th in the nation, and Baylor's has been even weaker. Because of that, ESPN's strength of record metric says it's easier to be 6-0 against the schedules of Nebraska and Baylor than it is to be 5-2 against Florida State's or Tennessee's. FBI, which is a measure of team strength, ranks the Huskers 27th and the Bears 19th. And neither team is in the top 25 for overall efficiency, which is opponent adjusted. Because of that adjustment, you won't find Nebraska's or Baylor's offense, defense, or special teams ranked in the top 25 either. And that's especially eye-opening with the Bears' offense. Our metrics very clearly suggest that neither Nebraska nor Baylor is a legit top 10 team. But as their respective schedules get much tougher in the second half of the season, they'll have a chance to prove the numbers wrong.
Okay, so maybe a bit of a buzzkill there. But listen. I think you have to look at this situation, and Brad noted it on Twitter, that as dinged up as Nebraska is, good win against Indiana, impressive comeback, and finish against the Illini, and I know the Illini is not great. Oregon's dropped off. Here's the thing. Nebraska's played who's been in front of them. Smack around, Seabass and Purdue Saturday. And then go put it on film, put it on the field, and own it against Whiskey. That's a whole nother topic to get into with Iowa or Wisconsin or Wisconsin or Iowa. Neither, many of you are saying and shaking your head at me. But if you get a Wisconsin team that's got a ton of value, 5-2, ranked in the top 10, you go up there and win on the road. Wow. Change some minds there nationally. Brad Edwards up next on Hail Varsity.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day! Day by day! We get better and better! We get better and better! We get beat, beat! We get beat, beat! Boom, beat, beat!
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Jay back with you tomorrow and Friday. Chris Schmidt, TJ Heading, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, Hour 2. Big thanks to Coach DiNardo. Last hour, welcome in ESPN Insider, college football analyst on game day. And, of course, with stats and info, Brad Edwards at JBradEdwards. Brad, the Huskers to 6-0 and a lot of other college football to talk. How you doing?
Oh, doing great. Heading out to Tuscaloosa in the morning to watch what, at least on paper, is the big game of the weekend, although I think there are a lot of people who don't expect it to be all that close.
Bama's just at a whole new level. Not new for them, but it's been unseen since the mid-90s Nebraska teams, and Alabama's just rocking people, especially those top 10 foes on the road. Those are supposed to be tough games, and they haven't been. Brad, I liked your video analysis that you did and put out on Twitter. When you look at top 10 teams, you say Nebraska and Baylor not top 10 teams. You have stats and data to back that up. And when you look at Nebraska and what's ahead of them here, Brad? You've had a chance to look at Nebraska, and first, give me your reaction to the win at Indiana. What'd you think of that performance?
Well, I thought it was a great win by them. I mean, first of all, to be able to jump out to the early lead that they did, I thought was huge. And then, you know, they got challenged. Indiana got back in it, as you kind of figured they would, and so Nebraska, you know, had to show something in terms of being able to make some plays and hold on to that lead. And so you put it all together, And it was a great win. Number one, because it was on the road against a good team, and they had to show some intestinal fortitude in order to pull it out. And then the other thing is that's the type of game, you know, just on the road against a quality team that Nebraska probably would have lost more often than not in recent years, especially after it ended up getting close at the end. So I think that's a big step forward. Look, I don't know that you came away from the day feeling better about your chances of winning the division, considering the way that Wisconsin played and how much better they looked offensively against Ohio State. But certainly that was a big hurdle for Nebraska in their season. And at this point, I would be surprised. I don't want to put the hex on them, but I would be surprised if they finish worse than 9-3 in the regular season, which would give them a chance to win a 10th game in the bowl. And I think 10 wins, whether it's 10-2 in the regular season or 10-3, including a bowl game, is a big step forward for that program.
Big step in 6-7, including the bowl win last year. So the flip flop is impressive. The thing that's concerning here is how's Nebraska going to be health wise moving forward? Armstrong was dinged up. The offensive line is a shell of themselves, and they had a major injury going into the season. But the thing that I think Nebraska fans are excited about was the defense, not only how comfortable they're playing, but just how well they tackled. Is that, and I know you don't just focus on Nebraska, Brad, but you've seen Nebraska games in kind of coin flip moments. I think that's as good as Nebraska's defense has looked in about 4 or 5 years. Do you agree?
Yeah, and look, I mean, according to our metrics, that's their bigger weakness, like between the the offense and defense, if you wanted to, put a hole in something going into last week, it was the defense. And I mean, it still is if you're looking at the numbers and the efficiency rankings. But given what it looked like they were going into the game, that was a really good performance. Now, I don't think Indiana is quite as good offensively as they had been last year.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's a capable team. And I think it's a good sign for Nebraska. And look, unless Wisconsin just, absolutely takes off and uses that Ohio State game as a launching point, I don't think they're ever going to be great offensively. And so as long as you're a decent defense, I think, any decent defense would be capable of holding Wisconsin down on the scoreboard. And so that would give you a chance against them. And at this point, in terms of being able to win the division, that's really what it would take, is going to Madison and, putting together a good defensive performance and probably winning a low-scoring game.
Since you have done a deep dive on the numbers on both Nebraska and Baylor on that video, do you like either of those teams to keep it going, just one of them, or do you see both stumbling? How do you see it playing out?
Well, my gut feeling is that Nebraska is going to lose at Wisconsin and they're going to lose at Ohio State. And if they lose one other game somewhere, then they're not going to finish in the neighborhood of top 10 when it's all said and done. But like I said, I would be surprised if they lose more than three in the regular season at this point. And, I think that's a good showing. I was on a show in Waco back in August, and I gave my opinion that I thought Baylor was a 9-3 type team. And I was surprised at the host of the show's reaction was, he's like, oh, we'd take that in a heartbeat. Because I think after everything Baylor had been through in the offseason, they were worried about the bottom falling out. And so maybe they're in a similar boat that, that 9 wins would be a good season for them if that ends up being a worst case scenario. But given where you are right now, look, I mean, it's fine to dream, aim high because not many teams get this far into the season undefeated. And so I don't blame, blame Nebraska or Baylor fans from thinking about a conference championship at this point. And I would give Baylor a better shot just because the best teams in the Big 12 are not as good as the best teams in the Big 10, and especially when you consider Nebraska has to go to Ohio State, that's a tall order, obviously for anybody to go in there and win. There's not a game like that on Baylor's schedule. I mean, the closest thing would be going to Oklahoma. We saw what Ohio State did there. Mm-hmm. If we assume that Nebraska and Baylor are fairly even teams, I think the schedule the challenge of going undefeated, if that's even what we're talking about, is much greater for Nebraska with their remaining schedule.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio, College Game Day ESPN insider and analyst. Brad, the topic of respect brought up beginning of the week in Nebraska. Some players felt disrespected by game day. Take care of it on the field. That's kind of your answer. That's my reaction to it. With your analysis and the way you look at Nebraska, from a respect standpoint, I think you think they're a good team. There's still kind of a wait-and-see mentality, not just those who cover college football nationally, but also locally. I mean, you kind of got three parts to the season to see where this team's at. Does Nebraska have to go win in Wisconsin and win at Ohio State to get that cred, or is it simply a play well from your perspective nationally?
Yeah, I think for me, it's play well, because we've established that Ohio State has not dropped off much from right. all the guys they lost to the NFL last year. They are still one of the elite teams in the country. Then you look at Wisconsin and what they've done in the last two games, hanging with both Michigan and Ohio State for 60 minutes. I think regardless of what you thought about them coming into the year, it's obvious they're a good football team. And so I think for Nebraska, especially being that both of those games are on the road, if they just hang in there and make both of those a four-quarter game, maybe even one of them, if it ends up being Ohio State, they could gain more respect for doing that in a loss than they could for going and, you know, blowing out a few of the teams that they have at home and the remaining conference schedule. And so, yeah, I think in terms of national respect and people going into next year saying, oh, Nebraska's a program to be reckoned with, I think that's what it would take, would be to if not win one of those games, you know, certainly to play Wisconsin and Ohio State pretty tough in those games on the road.
So you said you're heading down to Tuscaloosa, and I'm pretty jealous because I'm pretty excited for that Alabama A&M game. But let's talk about A&M. Third year in a row, they start 5-0. They finally get to 6-0. Can they make another jump and actually beat the Tide in Alabama?
Yeah, look, I think the challenge is when you start talking about beating Alabama, you look at what's typically been the formula for that over the last, you know, 8 or 9 years. And when you play Alabama, what it usually starts with is that you can't run the ball. I mean, that semifinal game where Ohio State beat them and Ezekiel Elliott went for like 200 yards, that's one of the rare times in Nick Saban's 10 years at Alabama that someone had good success running the ball on them. Typically, you go into the game knowing that you might be able to bust one run somewhere, but you're not going to have any consistency doing that. And so what that means is that the game is on your quarterback. The quarterback is going to have to make plays. Now, sometimes that can be as a runner, but at some point, he's going to have to make some throws. And against Alabama, they usually have to be big-time throws. I don't know that there's any team that I've watched over the last 6, 7, 8 years that has opposing receivers running open less often than Alabama. When you see these games where they lose and you go back and watch them again afterward, almost every big play made by the opponent in the passing game is to a receiver that's covered. And they're usually guys making throws in the tight spots. And what I'm saying is like NFL-type throws. Mm-hmm. Now, they don't always have to be NFL quarterbacks, future NFL quarterbacks, but at some point during that game, even if it's just the guy playing out of his mind and having the best game of his career, like Trevor Knight a few years ago in the Sugar Bowl, at some point you're going to have to make a few throws completed to guys who are covered fairly well, because that's typically what you're going to get every play against Alabama. And so you look at Trevor Knight and his completion percentage, it's barely over 50%. I mean, that would tell you that he's not a likely candidate to be able to make those throws. He defied the odds once. I think he completed like 74% of his passes in that Sugar Bowl back at the end of the 2013 season. So he can do it on a given day. The odds are against him being able to do it. I just think for a team to beat Alabama, I think, number one, they need to have a defense that can hold Alabama 21 points or fewer. I don't think A&M's defense is that good. It's better, but I don't think it's that good. And the other thing is the quarterback is going to have to make some some big time accurate throws under pressure, and I don't think Trevor Knight is that kind of quarterback. So, like I said earlier, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for A&M to kind of make this game interesting going into the fourth quarter. But I would be really surprised if we get to the final 5 minutes and it's in doubt.
You look at A&M and their success. I mean, it was the Johnny Football years. They won in Tuscaloosa, and it was a shootout, I think, week two or three back before, you know, Johnny left college. And that's kind of how it worked out. I don't know that Trevor Knight will ever be able to replicate what he did in the Sugar Bowl. I think you're right on with that. Real quick, Brad, you look at Ohio State. They're at Penn State, back-to-back road night games in brutal environments. Does Ohio State, I mean, the line on this thing's nuts. It's 19.5, and that's just a high number to go into Penn State. Ohio State probably deserves that. Are you feeling that way, or do you think it, you know, it could get a little hairy for them?
I can't really see them having difficulty winning this game, but I think the thing that I'm most looking forward to is that run defense, which I was surprised that Wisconsin was able to run the ball as well as they did. Not, you know, we know what Wisconsin typically does in the running game, but what they were last year running the ball and what they've been so far this year was not the type of team that I was expecting to have a lot of success against Ohio State, and they did. And so I think there are some questions about Ohio State's rush defense, how good it is, and Saquon Barkley is obviously a guy who can give you some trouble. Ohio State ended up winning that game pretty easily against Penn State last year, but he had a big game. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's kind of important here to Ohio State moving forward is, you know, can they fix some of those holes in their rush defense? And if they can't, then Penn State, because of that one back, is a guy who can, you know, who can really exploit that and end up making the game competitive. I just think Ohio State's offense has too much firepower for Penn State to, you know, hang in there for the full game.
Brad, about 60 seconds, and thanks so much for your time. The Purdue job, is Purdue either A, going to be able to pay enough, or B, a good enough of a landing spot potentially for a rehabbed coach to land back in a Power Five? Tell me how hard that job is to fill if you're Purdue.
Yeah, look, I think what Purdue can spend really depends on what they're willing to spend. You know, just because of the Big Ten money, the money from the Big Ten network, it should allow them to do more than they have previously, and it's just a question of whether they're willing to do it. Obviously, you know, the last hire, they went with a guy who they hoped was an up-and-coming guy out of the MAC, and then that didn't work out. And so we'll see if they aim higher with someone who, you know, is more proven as a head coach. But I don't know that a retread is necessarily the way to go. As much as it would feel like they're doing the same thing, I do think that Purdue probably is better off, you know, taking a shot on someone who's had success at a smaller school and, you know, hope that he is that guy. I do think they need to go for someone who has a reputation as, you know, as a guy who's offensively innovative or at least creative, because at Purdue you're going to have to out-scheme people. You know, you're not going to beat people by your personnel being better than theirs. And I think you really have to appreciate what Joe Tiller did.
Yes.
When you look at what Purdue has become now. I mean, he had so much success, and a lot of it had to do with just, you know, how good of an offensive coach he was and the system that he had. And so I think for Purdue and programs that are kind of like that, you need to be able to out-scheme people with your offense in order to have a chance to succeed, because your players are very rarely going to be as good as everybody else.
Brad, thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon. Appreciate your time.
All right. See you guys.
Brad Edwards with us on Hale Varsity Radio.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HaleVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right, all right, all right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back at it, Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time to get caught up with historian, author, Hall of Famer, Babbers, Mike Babcock at MD Babs on Twitter joins us. Nebraska winding down practice. Mike, how we doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. And, you know, for me, history only goes back a year to West Lafayette, Indiana, and a 55-45 Nebraska loss, which was a stunner.
You said it, capital S on the stunning part. I remember being in my living room, and those were, that was one of the Saturdays where I think that kickoff was, what was it, 2:30 on BTN? It was it was an afternoon kickoff, so we had the neighborhood, some friends over, and you threw something on the smoker, and by the time the game ended, the ribs didn't taste so well.
I mean, it probably should have been on the science fiction channel, actually.
Oh, you're right. It was just channel. Yeah, it was just something out of nowhere, and you hear the term rock bottom, low point. That's been emphasized and underlined, but Nebraska's been really, really good since then. Mike, how do you anticipate Saturday? Do you see it as a setup where Nebraska maybe kind of comes out flat, has a letdown, or will a year ago be enough to keep them ready to go?
Well, you know, the talk has been this week, you know, well, we, you know, that's in the past. We put the past in the past. You know, the players have said that, you know, that they don't. One of them said revenge is not a good way to approach a game, mm-hmm. Kind of a thing. But I think it's in the backs of their mind, and I think that they will. I think the Huskers will come out focused because of what happened last year, because of what's happened since, and as we every time we talk, I really think that this team is good at playing in the moment, and I think you see that in the fourth quarter against Illinois. I think you saw that in the fourth quarter against Indiana. Nebraska has had that focus and stayed with it, and you know, things didn't necessarily go the way people expected them to go, but at the end, Nebraska had the focus and the ability to get the job done, and I think that's what this team has to do, and I think that that's the way it will approach the Purdue game. You know, now from a fan standpoint, probably it's easy to look past Purdue because not only was Purdue not very good, but now doesn't have its coach, and that's a wrenching kind of a thing to go through in the during a season. But I think the players will be focused, and I think that we'll see that on Saturday. I think Nebraska will play well.
Mike Babcock with us, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Babbers, let's talk a little bit here about how Nebraska has won, and that's through running the football, controlling the line of scrimmage, controlling the clock. Can they do that at a high level Saturday? And statistics say yes is the answer. But, I mean, I know Neville practiced yesterday, but it sounded like Hahn, Whitaker, Utter, Farmer, Neville are your five, with Conrad kind of your swing guy. We'll see what happens later on in the week with Gates. But the point of it is Nebraska is so dinged on that O-line production-wise. Can they get good enough production, do you think, against this, you know, just undermanned Purdue defense?
Yeah, I think against Purdue, I think that'll happen. I think Nebraska can get the job done there. The question for me, as with a lot of people, I'm sure, is what happens when this line goes, the team goes to Wisconsin? What happens when it goes to Ohio State? You know, hopefully, from Nebraska's point of view, that, you know, Nick Gates is back and Neville is feeling pretty good because, you know, he went out in the Illinois game, and then he went out after the first play of the Indiana game, and the next thing you know, Cole Conrad's back in there. You know, I don't think he expected that against Indiana. But, it all depends on the offensive line, and when you're mixing and matching there, regardless of the focus that you have, you may have some problems. It's probably, again, you can say this as an observer, not a member of the team, but it's probably good that you've got Purdue to get some of those guys an opportunity to get some more reps out there before you go on that that two-game swing on the road that's going to really probably define your season.
And you're right. And again, from a non-team perspective, if things are going well, do you use Saturday as an opportunity to get guys like Decker and Gaylord and Jalen Barnett in there as well? I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but you just look at how dinged the O-line is. You have some walk-ons that are playing that have earned the trust of Coach Kavanaugh. That said, you've got some redshirt guys that were highly touted that haven't seen the field yet. Do you think that urgency will ramp up when it comes to their development, or does Nebraska kind of ride who they have right now?
Well, I think you kind of ride, on some level, you kind of ride with who you have right now because you want to get that chemistry straightened out with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do have some changes in there, and you do have some guys that don't have a lot of experience playing together, obviously. And so I think that's where you use it first. And you know, Mike Riley kind of addressed that on Monday, I guess, a little bit. Talked about Barnett, Decker, and Christian Gaylord. You know, those guys. It was kind of like, you know, down the line, they feel good about them, but. But right now, I think you work with the guys that you think are going to be out there. You don't. You're not in position again because of what happens after the Purdue game. I don't think you're in a position to start doing anything other than trying to develop chemistry with the guys that you have that are going to be out on the field. I think that's the way you take advantage of this week. And again, I say that as an observer, as a coach. You probably take nothing for granted, and certainly the Purdue game last year is a good example of why you don't do that.
Mike, being around football as long as you've been around and knowing how complicated the offensive line is, is it surprising to you or not surprising at all that some of these younger guys that have already redshirted, and we're talking Decker and Gaylord and Barnett, it takes some time to get ready, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And you know, it becomes a cliche. I deal in cliches, by the way. But it becomes a cliche. But the speed of the game is different when you get out there. It's different than it was in the spring game. It's different than it is in scrimmages. You get out there, and it's for real, and it's a whole different set of circumstances. And I think that's part of the adjustment. You know, some of the adjustment for young guys is physical, obviously. You got to get bigger and stronger. When you come here, you're probably not – especially when you're playing in the offensive line, you're not as big and as strong as you need to be, and you've got to work on that. But the other thing is you've got to have an opportunity to be in there when you can understand the speed of the game, how fast things happen. And that's why, you know, I would question how much you're going to rotate guys in there that haven't played a whole lot against Purdue, again, because you're still becoming accustomed to the guys on either side of you, or, you know, getting that chemistry in the offensive line. I don't think that they're where they want to be. Even if everybody was healthy, they're probably not where they want to be because, as Mike Riley said, you know, why it happens in the fourth quarter, I'm not sure. You know, I'm glad it does, kind of thing. And then part of that is I think still you're developing that chemistry among guys that just have not had a lot of opportunity to play together.
Mike Babcock with us, Hail Varsity Radio at MD Babs on Twitter. Mike, let's look at the Purdue job, and Coach Pelini's name came up according to a report yesterday. Don't know that it's a great fit either way, although his resume is enticing for a program that's been down like Purdue has. I was looking back in 2011, not that long ago, they were 7-6, went to a bowl game. Were pretty good, and then it just kind of went off the rails. They got rid of Danny Hope because he was under 500, and Coach Hazel hasn't worked out. It's been a while. I mean, I think 08 was the last year Joe Tiller was there, but he was really good, and he knew his niche. Can Purdue find that again?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, Smitty. Can Purdue find that again? I don't. The Big Ten is very competitive, and it's tough to catch up when you're behind. I think it's possible. I thought it was interesting that Bo's name came up, and I don't want to disparage him in any way, honestly. But the thing that I think would be difficult for him, I really think when you're trying to get a program turned around, you need some support outside, whether it's from fans. Media can't be scrutinizing everything that you do. And maybe the dynamic at Purdue is a little bit different. Well, I'm sure it's a little bit different than it is here. But, you know, that's one of the things that was difficult for him here, was relating to the media and relating to the fans and creating that them-against-us mentality. And I'm not sure if that works if you're trying to get a program turned around. You know, and that would be my one concern, I guess, if he were actually a candidate. What was it? Unnamed sources said that. Or
be something he'd be interested in, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. A kind of thing. You know, I just think that you need something other than a us-against-them mentality to turn a program around like where Purdue is right now.
Joe Tiller, you remember 1994, about 60 seconds, came in here with the Cowboys of Wyoming?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That Wyoming, you know, Wyoming was kind of a proving ground for coaches. You know, Tiller was one of many coaches, Pat Dye and Bob Devaney, obviously, for Husker fans. A lot of guys came through that Wyoming program and went on to coach at other schools, and I think that's that was on Tiller's resume as well, right?
It was, and that was a scary ball game. That was a scary ball game. The Nebraska eked one out at home. They got down pretty big in the first half.
Yeah, yeah. Go figure. I guess it's a good one to bring up with Purdue coming in this weekend, right?
You know, maybe so. And that team was really injured on that Saturday back in 94, similar when it comes to the injuries and the significance how Nebraska has won in 94. It was quarterback play and obviously running the football. This season it's been running the ball and that offensive line play, and that line needs to step up, and I'm sure they're getting ready to do so. Mike Babcock with this, HaleVarsity.com and magazine. Babbers, we'll catch up again. Thanks for a few minutes.
Hey, good talking to you, Smitty.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HaleVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Doug Tavis. Dr. Doug, how are we doing?
I'm doing a little bit better than most people that have Ben Roethlisberger on their fantasy football league teams.
Yeah, you know what? It seems like each week, Dr. Doug, we get a fantasy injury. And you had Big Ben have surgery earlier this week, torn meniscus. And let's get into it. The back portion of the show will let you gloat about your fantasy winnings. But I want to hear about, you know, Pittsburgh moving forward and Steeler Nation's a promising season is going to take a bit of a turn potentially here, the midway stretch. You know, New England's this weekend and no Big Ben. What's it look like for the rest of the year with Big Ben?
Well, I think that based on the, you know, the reports that we've gotten, he had a meniscus debridement or partial removal of the meniscus. And, you know, from a perspective of recovery, this is something that you can expect him to recover from fairly quickly if it's the meniscus on the inner aspect of the knee. If it's the one on the outer aspect of the knee, it could be a little bit of a wild card and take longer. So the medial meniscus is the one to the inner aspect of the knee, and that kind of a recovery is a 2 to 4 week time frame typically with this. The lateral meniscus to the outer aspect of the knee, that could go anywhere between 2 and 3 weeks up to 2 to 3 months. So it really can be a big difference on the lateral aspect of the knee.
Why the difference? And I know there are different parts of the knee and the meniscus is important, but how come, kind of explain if you could, why the difference in recovery and return?
Yeah, one of the things we don't think about with the knee a lot is that not only is it a hinge joint, but there is a rotational component to the joint. And you can kind of think about that if you, you know, if you rotate your foot internally and externally, you can kind of feel that it rotates around you, you know, in your knee. And the pivot point for that rotation is to the inner aspect of the knee. And so if that's the point of rotation, there's less motion right at that point than there is further away from that point of rotation where the lateral meniscus is. And for a variety of reasons anatomically and along with that rotational effect, when the lateral meniscus tears, there's just a lot more irritation to the joint, and there's a lot more swelling, and it just takes longer for the knee to recover. For the medial meniscus, there's generally less of that. There's generally a fairly quick recovery because the knee joint just calms down after the surgery pretty rapidly. So it, the two sides of the knee are really quite different from that perspective. And at this point, at least, I'm not sure which of the meniscal cartilages were involved here for Roethlisberger. The good news is he's a quarterback, and quarterbacks tend to come back from these kinds of injuries much easier than some of the other position players.
Talking Ben Roethlisberger, Big Ben, his knee injury. Today's Jock Doc on Hale Varsity Radio, Dr. Doug Tavis, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Now, Dr. Doug, let's get into Ben and when he is back, the remnants of this partial removal. Will it affect Plant? And he's never been fast, but he's been mobile enough. Will it be an issue, or will he look and play like, after enough time, like the old Big Ben?
Yeah, I think that it's reasonable to expect that he'll be back in, when the Steelers are in the playoff hunt, that he's going to be back and be mobile and functioning really pretty well. I think that with any of the NFL players that have a meniscal injury, the short-term prospects are generally pretty good. The longer-term prospects are the things that become more concerning. Now, again, a drop-back quarterback is a little bit different scenario than a cornerback who's trying to, run and pivot and gyrate around trying to, keep up with the ends. But the drop-back quarterback position, especially, as Roethlisberger plays it, that's pretty compatible with even long-term function with a meniscal injury.
For folks wondering, what's the meniscus do and why is it important, can we refresh that real quick as to the need for it?
Yeah, sure. There's, in all of our joints, we have cartilage that lines the end of the bone. It's kind of like that cartilage cap on the end of a chicken bone that we're all familiar with. But in the knee, we have two other cartilages called the meniscal cartilages. And those are like shock-absorbing cartilages that are in the knee. They're not there to necessarily provide a real smooth surface for motion. That's the cartilage that's adhered to the end of the bone. But the meniscal cartilages share the load like a shock absorber does. And when we lose those meniscal cartilages, that stress then gets transferred to the cartilage lining the end of the bone, which eventually can break down and become symptomatic. And essentially, that's what arthritis is of a knee.
Is there any, you mentioned arthritis, and that's a reality for a lot of NFL guys. Is there anything they can do when you have surgeries like Big Ben's had? Is there any preventative or preemptive things you can do for down the road if you're a football player and knees or the meniscus is giving you trouble in your career?
Yeah, I think especially on the lateral meniscus, it's not unusual for me to put somebody in a what's called a lateral unloading brace as a way of trying to decrease the loads that go across that part of the joint. It basically is a brace that kind of shifts the pressure over to the better side of the knee, if you want to say it that way. So that's one thing that can be done. We're certainly getting more and more aggressive about trying to repair the meniscal cartilage as opposed to removing it. There have been some new advances with the types of equipment that we have arthroscopically to repair the meniscus. Really kind of a bit of a paradigm shift in our thought processes for how many of these meniscal cartilages can we possibly get to heal, and if they do heal up well, that bodes well for the future. The downside of the repair, then you got to be off of it for quite a little while. So if Ben actually were to have a repair of the meniscus, the chances of him playing through this season would be pretty small.
Dr. Doug, how did last week in fantasy go?
Oh, gosh. You know, Chris, you gotta be leading the league if you're going to be playing, right?
You're talking. So we're both division leaders. I like it.
There we are. There we are, yeah. No, it's been an interesting year because there really have been a lot of injuries in the NFL to really key players, we kind of joke about it here with the fantasy league, but you know the NFL is it's a big business and it's a significant part of our culture, and people really watch what happens with these injuries.
Dr. Doug, keep up the good work. Thanks for a few minutes today.
All right, Chris. Take care. All right, Chris.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio and JMoore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Ah, yes, let's hear you, Cleveland. 3-0 over Toronto. The Tribe to the series. And Indian fans popping a beer. Shafe might be at practice. But half of it's figured out. Cubs, Dodgers tonight. Safe driving demands your full attention. One of every three traffic fatalities in Nebraska, alcohol-related. Many of those drivers involved buzzed while driving. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Office of Highway Safety. Nate has been patiently waiting. Nate, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Christoph, what's going on, bro?
Nothing, man. What do you know?
Oh, life's good. So I'm going to take a minute to toot my own horn and also advertise a good idea. Do you remember about 16 months ago when a certain somebody starts with N, ends with 8, was saying something to the effect of Nebraska should look at Ed Orgeron? This dude has saved USC until they screwed it up again. And he's in the process of saving LSU. If this thing continues to work out, how Ed Orgeron does not have a major college job, permanent residence next year is baffling. Riley seems.
Let me stop you there, real. Let me stop you there on Ed.
Yeah.
You mentioned permanent residence.
Yeah.
Where Ed lives, the NCAA also take up permanent residence.
That's true.
Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and Ed can maybe be a figurehead. He can get an OC. He's got the defensive coordinator there. Clearly, somebody didn't like him at USC because he kept that thing from sinking after a tough start when Kiffin was popped on the tarmac. Ed can recruit. My old chiropractor played for Ed at Miami. So easy Ed stories are gold, but you can't tell them. Okay?
I mean, you're right. But I mean,
Ed makes sense. Ed makes sense as a recruiter and a defensive coordinator and a position coach. As a CEO, there's always something that's screwed up. Unless maybe this is different. But history says he's a tire fire when it comes to being the head man.
He was great in Blindside.
I'm sure he was.
Chris, always a pleasure.
See you, man. Take care.
I said, what up?
Have a good one, man. All right. Now, the easy Ed love fest. That's too easy to say. Well, Ed and the NCAA, listen, I mean, Ole Miss was there, Ed was there, and I got to get my facts straight with whether he preceded or followed Houston Nutt. Either way, it didn't work out. I said Mississippi State, I meant Mississippi. Coach Blake, I believe, was at Mississippi State. Point is, there's just, he brings attention, right? Remember Casino, when De Niro's character went on TV? It brought unwanted attention to the dons and underbosses from the mafia. Ed Orgeron's crazy, though, in a good way. Really good coach, great recruiter, personality, and that's his strength. Go make $1.5 million as a recruiting coordinator in D.C. Know your limits. The thing is once you've tasted being a head coach, I gather, you don't want to go work for another dude. Just don't, because you got to get into it. And specifically, position coach. Your position coach, you got to recruit your butt off. You're a coordinator, at least they bring the talent to you. You still got to be good at it, though. You still got to recruit. Hey, we'll talk to you tomorrow at 4, Thursday with Hail Varsity. Thursday with